Be seated, please. The court is ready to hear argument in 061022, Del Lago Partners and Others versus Bradley Smith.
May it please the court, counsel, this case presents this court with the opportunity to redirect trial and appellate courts from their current errant path. Property owners are being held responsible now more than ever for third-party crime that is being committed on their premises when there's either no duty owed, no breach of that duty, or no proximate cause of the injury. Duty, of course, is the central and controlling question, and this court has been analyzing duty for many years in these types of cases. Back in 1985, Nixon versus Mr. Property Management, in which a small child was abducted, taken into a vacant apartment complex, and raped. Of course, this case, this court determined that the duty owed was based upon an ordinance that controlled how the property premises was supposed to have been kept up. But when summary judgment was reversed, this court held that some decisions that needed to be made below were whether the criminal history of the premises made the rape of this child foreseeable.
Well, let's talk about that. One of my favorite movies of all time is As Good as It Gets. And Justice Gray makes reference to that in his well-reasoned dissent. I want to know about these other activities that occurred on a property and how they may or may not be similar to the incident. He had a fraternity reunion party, which some may argue that would have been foreseeable for some type of fisticuffs to occur at some occasion, and how the other events relate to this, if at all.
Well, and Del Lago would submit that these prior events don't relate at all. As the court is well aware, Del Lago is an upscale resort. Yes, there was a fraternity reunion party there. However, Del Lago had never before seen an aggravated assault.
But they had at least 11, correct, incidents that were similar to this over the last 3 years?
Well, and many of those incidents were alleged only. Actually, let's talk about them. One, we had an argument out on the golf course. We had two domestic disputes. We had one altercation between two young women at a New Year's Eve party in a cottage. And then we had one verbal altercation between a group back behind the tower. So there's 5 out of the 11. Then we had 3 reported sexual assaults. One was no billed, and 2 never got beyond the reporting stage. So there's 8 out of 11. The last 3 were incidents in the bar. They were one a year, 1998, one in 1999, one in 2000.
Were they stranger incidents or known party incidents?
In the bar? In the bar, the first incident back in 1998 is actually the only one that's even relatively similar, which was some sort of an altercation between two groups in the bar at closing time. But there's no further evidence beyond that. There's no evidence of injury. There's no evidence of an aggravated assault. There's no evidence of anyone having their head slammed into a wall.
Well, and what about the reports or the incidents that the expert discussed?
Well, all of these reports the expert discussed, and in fact, interestingly, the plaintiff's expert only talked about 9 incidents. The plaintiff said there were 11, and the Court of Appeals somehow found 14, finding that because security had been called back, for instance, to the golf course, somehow that became 2 incidents instead of just 1. But the expert did talk about all these incidents, but tried to draw the similarity between them in that he assumed alcohol was involved. But there's no evidence in this case that alcohol was involved in most of the incidents that occurred. And further, that takes us off into a whole other duty analysis than should be before the court now. But also, there's the 1999 incident in the bar where a gentleman didn't want to leave. They called security, and he pushed the guard or hit the guard, I'm not sure which, but there is no report of an injury. Certainly, it was not an aggravated assault. No one's head was pushed in a wall, and we did not have a melee.
Is there a duty to provide security at all in a situation where you have a resort, you're selling alcohol, you know there could be, if foreseen, there could be rowdy people, and there's crime endemic in our society. Is there any duty, or are you saying that there's never a duty to provide security if there's no incident that is quite similar to the ones that the lawsuit is based on.
Well, based upon the prior precedent of this court has always looked to very similar prior conduct, whether it was in the greater Houston transport case, Justice Gonzalez.
So if I'm opening up a brand new facility in a place that had no residents before, a new resort, mm-hmm. and I'm selling alcohol and inviting the public for parties and that sort of thing, and it's a 1,000-person facility, do I have a duty or not under the common law under our precedent to provide security?
At this moment, you don't have a duty. What is foreseeable to you? What criminal conduct is foreseeable to you on your property? The precedent of this state provides that simply because you sell alcohol does not mean that it's foreseeable that people are going to get into fisticuffs. And again, if you've got a nice upscale resort versus a little bar in the Fourth Ward or something, there may be some differences there.
If you're opening a new a bar in town, mm-hmm. and there's been no incidents of violence or mm-hmm. fights, then you have a person with the owner with no duty to the public to protect them from the potential for fights.
Well, again, there would have to be some prior conduct that would alert the owner to the need to bring
security
in the first place.
How about the common sense that we've been talking about this morning?
Well, now, this, in varying opinions from different justices of this court, it has been recognized that it is no small burden on a property owner to staff security guards. And that is a very great burden on a property owner. Certainly, we're not going to check.
But what happens, as in here, where the property owner has already taken it upon itself
right.
to staff security guards, for whatever reason these security guards left, does that create a duty because they've done that? They take the affirmative stance of trying to present some type of safety for the public?
Well, simply because I have undertaken a burden that is not necessarily my duty to do does not then impose an additional duty upon me. Certainly Del Lago, and according to several of the witnesses in this case, went above and beyond the call of duty based upon the minute criminal history that was at this premises by having the local chief of police as the head of their security, 20-plus years of peace officer experience, 4,000-plus hours of training.
And counsel, apparently plaintiff's expert witness, I believe it was Gerald Brandt, acknowledged that because,
yes.
as I understand it,
yes.
Plaintiff Bradley Smith has acknowledged that, through that expert, that the security force at Del Lago was significant and appropriate.
Absolutely.
So we're dealing with a narrower question, kind of broadly, duty to do anything or have security. I guess the narrower question is, as I read the response, were the security properly trained and timely called or deployed? Those seem to me to be the narrow duty issues from reading the respondent's brief. Do you see it otherwise?
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to the security on the premises, according to Gerald Brandt, he had two problems. One is he assumed that all of the activity that was happening at the Del Lago Resort at 1:30 in the morning when this fight suddenly erupted was happening in the bar, number one. And number two, he assumed then that Del Lago had deployed those security officers away from the bar where there was significant activity. So here are the problems with that. One is the evidence is clear that by the time the bar closed, there were maybe 25 people left in the bar.
So it sounds like the issues, are those the two duty issues, or are you saying you think they're different duty issues before you explain the facts that support your position?
Training would not be an issue.
Being called, timely called.
And being timely called.
And not deployed somewhere else.
And not deployed somewhere else should not be an issue either because, well, it's Del Lago's position that if we're going to impose that duty upon the property owner, then we are now placing the property owner in the shoes of a security company.
I'm not asking if you win on those two issues.
I understand.
Are those the issues that the plaintiffs are raising or respondents are pointing to here at this court for why they're for us to consider establishing a duty on them? Not
they,
broadly having security.
Sure.
They acknowledge security was appropriate.
They certainly seem to take issue with whether security was in the right place at the right time and why that is the case.
But that would go more to the question of breach, wouldn't it? I mean, it doesn't really go to the question of whether there's a duty in the first instance.
I agree with that.
And there's been some briefing about whether interpersonal crimes should be different than the stranger initiated.
Right.
Does that construct really apply in the context of a barroom? Now, I understand you're claiming Del Lago is a family resort, and just put that aside for the moment. Isn't there some element of foreseeability of barroom brawls?
Well, again, I know that, and Justice O'Neill in particular, I know that in your opinion in the Mellon Mortgage case, I know you wanted to add to the construct more than just the five Timberwalk factors, but also put into place what kind of establishment are we running here, and is it the kind that would invite crime? This is an upscale resort, and simply because they're selling alcohol, you cannot possibly impute an additional duty.
No, I understand that. And that was a given in my question. Sure. I understand you're taking Del Lago out of the typical bar room sort of construct.
Exactly.
But presume with me it's just a bar. Do you then have to analyze the neighborhood that bar is in and determine foreseeability?
Well, it would be our position that we would just look at the bar itself to see ability, but if we are going to look out beyond the bar and look at the resort as a whole, and that's as far as it went, there was no testimony about crime in the surrounding area or in Montgomery County or Shenandoah, but within the resort itself, if we're going to look at the duty at the whole resort, then we have to look at how that duty was met within the whole resort. This court has stated time and again in many different scenarios that domestic violence does not portend stranger-initiated
violent
crime.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, let me word it just a little bit differently. Let's take not this situation, but let's take that you've got a bar, perhaps in an area of town that is a high-crime area.
Okay.
And it may be interpersonal, it may be stranger-initiated crime, but just a high level of crime in general.
Mm-hmm.
And someone puts a bar right in the middle of a high-crime area, would you say that some element of foreseeability is present for someone who is a patron to that bar?
I would say so under that scenario.
Under that scenario,
yes.
I understand. And so if that's the scenario that you're looking at, you don't really necessarily have to look at whether there were prior similar incidents. You can look at crime in the general surrounding area. And at that point, you're looking at, then you've got to just look at, is this different from that? Is this being a family resort, is it a different sort of construct?
Well, I think I would agree with the court that we do certainly have differing scenarios here, although I still believe that based upon all the prior precedent from this court, you've still got to look at the various prior incidents to determine whether or not this was foreseeable. And previously, this court has held that domestic assaults do not then put a property owner on notice of an aggravated assault that could occur on their property.
Three incidents in the bar, any serious or severe injuries in any of those?
There's no evidence of that at all, Your Honor. No, not at all.
They were just bar fights.
Well, and they weren't even bar fights.
I mean, they're bar fights and they're bar fights, I suppose.
Well, there's what happened in this case, which was an absolute melee, according to the various witnesses in this case. And then you've got the verbal altercation between the group in 1998. In 1999, you've got the one gentleman who didn't want to leave the bar. And in 2000, you have an older gentleman who was next to a pool table on the floor and said he'd been pushed down. That one was called in as a medical emergency, and there was never a confirmed injury.
But
you have nothing similar to what happened in this case.
Well, does it have to be similar, or do it have to be just an assault? I mean, Justice Vance makes it very clear in his opinion. There's a sexual assault at Del Lago in 1999, another sexual assault in 2000, mm-hmm. another one in 1999, another one, two of them in 1999, another one in 1997. I mean, how many of them do there have to be before there's a duty imposed on whether it's an upscale resort or someplace in there? I don't see the distinction. If someone wants to go have a drink in a fourth ward that they perceive to be safe, are they entitled to any less of a duty?
Oh,
under the law
because
of some upscale, so-called upscale place that has, five sexual assaults on its premises in less than 2 years?
Well, one thing that we need to be clear about, if I may, is that the record shows that, again, those were calls to security for alleged sexual assaults that never panned out. I mean, one of them was no-billed. Two of them did not get beyond the reporting stage. In Timberwalk, this court recognized that calls to police are only calls. They are not crimes, and many lower courts have followed that guidance, but the Waco court refused to do that, and that's another issue in this case. And in fact, the write-up on this case takes it a little bit further than what the evidence is. There were prior calls to security for the past 6 to 8 years was the testimony that the plaintiff could come up with. It was very vague testimony. There was no testimony about what happened, when it happened, where it happened, who was involved, what were the circumstances.
I've got sort of a tangential question. Is there anything in the record about the sort of TABC enforcement history about the resort? Nothing about serving intoxicated individuals who might be more likely to engage in fisticuffs or brawls?
No, Your Honor. Not for this. All that the plaintiff could come up with were the 11 incidents this court has heard about this morning. That's it. That's all they had to try to show.
Has the resort, as a result of this lawsuit, altered, just out of curiosity, a sort of security scenario at the resort, made any kind of changes at all?
I do not have an answer to that question. I don't know. I know at this time Del Lago is closed, and they've been purchased by a new owner, and they're being revamped and reopened. But certainly, we would ask this court to apply its prior precedent in this case with respect to foreseeability, look to whether the prior alleged crimes on the property are similar. Let's make sure they're confirmed first. That's the most important because, again, how can a property owner be on notice of a problem unless there's actually a problem?
Wasn't it the employee of the property owner that talked about these other alleged incidents?
Was there an employee that talked about
it? Wasn't the person who spoke about these other incidents an employee of the property owner?
Well, it was the security guards. The two security guards. But, again, any discussion by them was very vague without any detail whatsoever outside of those 11 reports.
So the property owner should disregard what its own hired security guard tells them?
No.
Unless there's a report to the police and the police says, okay, we'll take this one but not the others?
No, Your Honor, not at all. Actually, again, we have to remember that it's important that a call is only a call. It's not a crime. There is no evidence that any crime occurred in any of those calls to security.
Well, what if it's a report to the property owner and the property owner said, look, let's not talk about this. We got an upscale report. We want a resort. We want people to keep coming here. So we don't want everyone to know that you can come here and be sexually assaulted or get your head rammed into a wall.
Well, there's no evidence of that whatsoever, Your Honor. May I continue?
Conclude your remark.
Yes. There is absolutely no evidence in this record of any hiding of anything by Del Lago. And, in fact, that's part of the problem with trying to get into all this vague testimony is inferences that go so far beyond what the evidence is in the case. Now we have a $1.5 million judgment against a property owner.
Any further questions? Thank you. The court is now ready to hear arguments from the respondent.
May it please the court, Chief Justice. To go back to what you were asking a moment ago, Your Honor, about these unreported incidences, the evidence was clear from Chief Chancellor that he had been called out at least 50 times over the past few years, 25 of which he was responding to fights or verbal confrontations inside the bar, 25 other times to other areas on this 300-acre premises. The night this occurred, there were only two guards on duty. They were in a golf cart together in the back 40 while all the activity was going on here at this bar. It was the only place open to the public at the resort that night. It was the only place serving alcohol.
So you're not saying that reports of activities in the parking lot, car break-ins, reports of thefts like that have anything to do with the duty of Del Lago in this case, are you?
Well, property crime, and there's other cases of this and other.
But the focus has to be the bar.
Well, according to the Timberwolf factors, the proximity would include the exact part where the injury occurred or anywhere on the owner's property. And this resort, of course, is all owned by Del Lago.
Right.
There's been other cases that have gone a mile to a mile and a half.
Do you think that a bar owner, any bar owner, is required to have a security office at the bar to discharge a duty?
Well, it's kind of like Justice O'Neill stated in the
yes.
Mellon dissent. It depends on the character, the place of the business.
And you think in this case, and you think in this case, it did?
Well, they would like to say it's an upscale resort. Chief Chancellor got up and called it Houston's Playground. I see truckloads of alcohol coming in here.
Well,
all the
clearly,
time.
In some place like Billy Bob's in Fort Worth, you know, everybody knows the kind of things that go on there. And so maybe it is a good idea to have, I don't know whether they do, have a security office in the bar. They train all their employees how to break up fights, talk people down, that sort of thing. But you think that the record shows in this case that that's the sort of thing that it would be necessary for this upscale resort to have in their bar? In this
we do, Your Honor. 14 prior incidences.
How many of them in the bar? How many of them in the bar?
There was 3 inside the bar, 2 right outside the bar, and it's also noteworthy.
And it's a big place.
Correct. It's got cottages, the tower.
It's got a lake, it's got a golf course, it's got a tennis court, it's got a baseball, it's got a whole bunch of stuff.
Correct.
And, but we should consider 2 folks getting in a fight in their cottage and deciding whether you ought to have a policeman at the bar.
According to the proximity factor set out at Timberwolf.
Well, we've got a similarity factor also. And a bar is a little different from the check-in desk, which is a little different from the day spa. I mean, we're going to have to put a policeman in the day spa because other people got in a fight in the bar. I mean, it's the same property, right?
Same property, and it would go to...
We don't really need a security guard in the day spa.
I wouldn't think so. Oh, what we do need, Your Honor, is someone...
Well, what if there were a rape in the day spa? Then we would have needed a security guard in there, wouldn't we?
Possibly so. But what we do need, Your Honor, we need to have security where you see with your own eyes an hour and a half of drunk, obnoxious people yelling at each other, screaming curses and threats to one another, actual squaring up, pushing matches 10 minutes before this big fight came about. Now, they had security.
And, of course, you hadn't sued any of those people.
Who's that, Your Honor?
Any of the people that were in the fight.
No, they were unidentified.
Well, how hard have you tried to identify?
Well, in discovery, we asked for everybody's name who was in that wedding party, and that stuff was not produced.
Subpoena?
We tried to get it through discovery.
I still see how domestic disputes out in the cottage or in a Del Lago, that there may be some stranger-initiated fighting in the bar.
I understand and appreciate your concern. That was not a domestic incident. It was 2 females at a New Year's Eve party. One of them was extremely intoxicated, and a fight occurred. However, we all know, and this goes back to the justice that we memorialize today. Common sense basically is what makes you have foreseeability in these types of cases. It's common sense that an assault usually begins how? As a verbal confrontation or a verbal assault.
How few incidents in a 3-year period have been in your view to give a premises owner ample warning?
How many?
How few?
Well, there's some cases that say 8's enough. There's other cases.
So over a 3-year period, what's the lowest number that still suffice to give a Del Lago?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that it depends on not just how many have happened, but again, the nature and character of the business. But most importantly, what you see right in front of you for an hour and a half. Look, this is a premises liability case at its core. This is the same type of incident you would see where if the Kroger's manager walked down an aisle and saw some Coke spilled on the floor.
Who saw, be precise, who saw what exactly an hour and a half before?
Elizabeth Sweet was a waitress, the cocktail waitress that testified that a lot of the people were intoxicated. They continued to serve. There were very heated exchanges for an hour and a half before this big fight occurred. There were other witnesses that testified about the pushing matches, squaring up, name calling, things of that nature. But if the Kroger...
Nobody ever called, and the policemen, security officers never came by.
That's the evidence, Your Honor. Well, that's the evidence that the jury believed. Of course, it was contested somewhere.
Actually, in this case, there was a call, and they did come. You just claimed that they were too late.
After the fight began, Elizabeth Sweet, the waitress, tried to call security. The number wasn't posted. She called the front desk, told her to get a hold of security herself. And then security showed up.
What were the specific things that you think Del Lago had a duty to do that they didn't do?
First of all, Your Honor, they did not call in security when they saw this 1.5-hour episode of assaultive conduct.
So you think they should have called security before the fight started because you think they had reason to know one was going to happen?
Sure. There's an hour and a half stuff going on right in front of
them. That's one thing. What else do you think they didn't do?
Again, it was the only place in the bar that was open that night. The night before, they had security at the bar and actually had tossed at least one obnoxious, unruly person. They knew from their BEOs, which is something telling them where all the events are located that night. They knew that this was going to be the place where most of the action was going on. And in fact, the testimony is the place was packed.
So it sounds like you're saying the security should not have been rotating throughout the facility. They should have either been stationed at the grandstand bar, or they should have had additional security to station them at the bar.
Correct, Your Honor. And even,
anything else?
Even the defendant's experts stated
it. Come back and explain it, if you would, in just a second.
Sure.
What else do you claim they had a duty to do and didn't do? Those two things, or is there something
They should
else?
Have called security. They should have had security posted. Even the bartenders themselves, there were other men and ladies working in the bar. When they saw this conduct, they could have stepped in and tried to defuse the situation. They, and they alone, had the power of control and expulsion, which is one of the things that the Exxon versus Tidwell case made clear. In these types of duties, is whoever has the power to control or expel someone, they have the duty when they see, should know, by either observation or past experience.
Well, but you see here, you try to talk about the water pooled on the floor premises case. This is a case where somebody has committed a criminal act. It's a little bit different than this water pooling on the floor, isn't it?
It may be, but...
So there has to be some greater degree of foreknowledge about that sort of activity taking place. What if, for example, 3 years ago, on a New Year's Eve party in the Headliners Club in Austin, there's some a verbal altercation that took place, maybe some pushing and shoving, and then a year later, you had over Thanksgiving weekend a Longhorn Aggie party, and there was some words said and pushing around and that sort of thing, and then a year after that, maybe something else. And then... do you think at that point that the Headliners Club would be required to have police officers standing by and training of its staff to figure out what to do about stopping a bar fight if during the, say, a following wedding party and a fraternity party get together and they start beating each other's heads in?
I would say they would, Your Honor, when they see dangerous
What would be the foreknowledge that the Headliners Club would have in that event that the criminal activity was going to take place?
Well, if there was bickering, pushing, shoving, squaring up for an hour and a half, that's actual notice. That's about as good notice as you can get. They see something like that. If they don't act, that's just plain negligence.
Where does it stop, though? I mean, I'm involved in a lot of youth baseball, and I see parents hollering at each other all the time and bickering with each other. Do we have to have a security guard there or a cop there just because one of these days, these parents are going to break out and start hitting each other?
No, I don't believe it would.
Just the fact because alcohol is served? Or
that's a part of it. That's one of the factors that we believe this court should consider. This week, the waitress said that most of the people there were intoxicated. And it's common sense, again, that, and even both witnesses, even Merlin Moore, the expert for the defense, said that the behavioral problems this night were probably caused by alcohol.
Are you asking the court to expand Timberwalk or any of those cases?
Not at all. Not asking to expand it at all. Matter of fact, we think that because of the actual notice, there should be held a duty. Like Justice O'Neill said in the Mellon case, it's fine foreseeability in this case when you have an hour and a half of verbal and physical confrontations going on with blink reality and strain the Timberwalk factors beyond their logical or intended reach.
Well, your Timberwalk didn't go into great detail on recency, though. And you're saying that an hour and a half of notice of what you think are indications there's going to be a fight is sufficient to provide the duty and show of reach. At some point, the recency argument goes too far. If it's 10 seconds before the fight breaks out, then there's no way to do anything about that, right?
So where
do you draw a principled line on your recency argument?
Well, part of the thing that you look at when you're seeing if there's foreseeability or duty is the risk, foreseeability, likelihood of injury versus such as the magnitude of the burden. In this case, you had two security guards already on the site, less than a quarter of a mile away. when you see all this activity go on, there was no burden whatsoever for those people in the bar to pick up the phone and demand security to get down there or step in and try to break up the bad actors or get the rowdy people out.
What if they had no security? Would it be different?
I don't think it would be different at all. I think they'd be even more culpability if they didn't have it.
So you believe the bartender and the waitress should have called security?
Yes, without a doubt.
As I understand it from the facts, and correct me if I'm wrong, the manager of the bar came by periodically, but not during this hour and a half period.
The manager had left before this occurred, according to the
So the people left in the bar were the bartender who worked for Delago, the bartender of the management company, waitress, was there others?
There was at least, there was Arlene Duncan, who was like the head bartender, Elizabeth Sweet, who was a waitress, and then another waitress that we know of. And if I recall the evidence correctly, there was at least one male bartender.
Right. And you think they had a duty to call security back to the premises when they saw this activity
yes,
going on?
Definitely. Timberwalk, as we know, this court adopted that from the Arkansas Supreme Court case of Boren. And
well, I'm a little bit confused when we talk about Timberwalk and then we talk about what happened here. A lot of the factual issues we're talking about seem to me to go to breach. If we can just focus on duty to provide security, do we look at that in terms of duty to provide security at the bar, at the resort? In order to find no duty here, would we have to look at the record of incidents on the entire resort and say as a matter of law there was no duty to provide security for the resort? Would we look at just the incidents that happened in the bar and determine whether there was a duty as a matter of law in the bar? Can you guide me towards the
Yes, Your Honor. And I get my guidance from your opinion and Justice Abbott's opinion, Mellon, the Timberwalk opinion, and other cases.
That's a bit of a problem, isn't it, since... All due respect, she was the dissent.
She was, but she and Abbott.
So if we draw the principles from the majority, do you lose?
No, we win because her and Justice Abbott agreed that in that case there was a duty, there was plenty of foreseeability.
But we have security here to broker between you.
But going back to those cases, Your Honor, they looked in some cases, like in the Timberwalk example. I believe it was they had a mile and a half radius that they looked for. So they not only looked to the apartment complex, but the surrounding neighborhoods as well. The same thing in the Mellon Court. They looked not only at the garage.
But is it different as they emphasize this is an upscale place?
I certainly disagree with it being upscale.
Well, be careful, because I bet everybody's sitting in front of you in the bar activities.
Probably
at this Del Lago.
As have I.
I mean, lawyer bar, not liquor. This is a frequent place. This is where the Houston Bar Association, Dallas Bar Association, a lot of people in the room will end up at bar activities after it reopens. So assume with me for a moment that it's not like the Three Aces on the saloon on the edge of town. Does it matter if this is the Four Seasons Resort? Doesn't that enter into the analysis of all the Timberwalk factors?
Your Honor, I see my time is over, Mayor.
Again,
Your Honor, it goes to past criminal acts. In this case, we believe there's enough under Timberwalk to get us to the duty.
Is that a yes or a
yes,
no?
It is.
So the quality of the resort, what kind of resort it is, what kind of clientele they try to attract, does enter into
it? I believe it does. But then also you've got, most importantly, the actual notice in this case of an hour and a half physical and verbal confrontations that they did nothing
but
at all.
But again, that seems to me to go to breach. I mean, if the question is teed up as, if you just look at the bar and you say there have been, three prior incidents inside the bar, add three that are immediately close by, let's just say that there were six incidents loosely related to the bar. The legal standard would be, is that enough or not enough to establish a duty or to negate a duty as a matter of law?
We believe that the actual notice is much more powerful than what has happened in the past 3 years. When you see something like this going on for an hour and a half, that should provide enough foreseeability to have a duty
Court will hear from Mr. Dodd.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you. David Dyes on behalf of Brad Smith, who actually was injured terribly in this case. I just wanted to set a few things straight. My opposing counsel said that there's no evidence of hiding the record. The facts are in this case that there were 12 documented assaults, 4 serious sexual assaults reported, 50 undocumented events occurring, 25 in the bar, and 25 in the cottages.
All that happened in this so-called upscale place?
Correct.
I guess upscale clientele commit crimes, just
correct.
Like people in the Fourth Ward perhaps do.
This is a little bit different situation. The testimony is from security guard Chancellor that this was Houston's playground. People would bring truckloads of alcohol and beer into the resort in a, quote, enormous quantities. And they would go from the cottages to the bar to the conference rooms. They're all close to each other. The tower's right next door. They would be going in and out. And so Del Lago, and then at the time of the closing, the bar was the only place serving alcohol. And Del Lago had security. They reserved the right to provide security. They directed how the security was to be used. Security guard Moriarty said that if he had been told to be in the bar closing that night, he would have been there. Merlin Moore, their expert, argued that they had, quote, directed security, which is preferred over random security, because the study showed that random security does not work. He said that was their policy. If they had that policy, and if you follow the evidence in the case, there's no question that they reserved the right over security over the whole premises. Brad Smith and the fraternity party paid, in part, through the bill for that security, for the whole premises. Justice Heck in Timberwalk, I believe, says that the owner's property is what you look at.
But of course, I'm all for legislature passing laws saying you got to have police officer in the bar. Everyone. But there's not such a law. And so we've got to make a rule. And what happens now, if you're asking us to say, okay, you've got to have somebody in the bar, and there's not going to be somebody out behind the cottages. And then the next time that happens, they pay $1.5 million for that. Okay, now there's got to be somebody there. And pretty soon, you have to have somebody everywhere.
Well, let me answer this question, sir. For that hour and a half before this happened, and these officers were only a minute or two away, for the hour and a half that there were numerous crimes being committed in front of the waitresses and the bartenders, there was public intoxication, assaults, verbal and physical. There were 2 shoving matches in front of the bar right next to it where the bartenders could not miss it. That's the irrefutable evidence from several witnesses.
It's irrefutable that there are many crimes committed during the hour and a half?
I'm sorry?
You said, it sounds like you just said it's irrefutable that there are many crimes committed in the bar before your client was
injured. I believe so, sir.
Was anyone indicted or tried?
No, sir. If no,
were there any criminal complaints filed?
Not that I know of.
I'm baffled at how you can say it's indisputable then that there are many criminal violations committed that night.
Because at least 5 witnesses testified to the ongoing heated verbal and physical confrontations that were going on in the bar for an hour and a half before the big fight occurred.
And understand that statement.
And I'm saying that is criminal activity right in front of the bartenders. And both security guard Moriarty and security guard Chancellor testified if they had been called, they could have been there within a minute or two and could have stopped it. In fact, Chancellor said that if an officer was in the bar, it would have stopped it. The security has a chilling effect on this activity. And their own expert argued or agreed that security in the bar has a chilling effect. So
did the eventual phone call to security come before, shortly before, or right after punches began flying?
I'm sorry.
Did the eventual security phone call, did they finally call security after punches began flying or just before?
Security phone call came right after the fight started, the big fight.
after an hour and a half of verbal argument, assaults, and heated conversations, then, actually, this is an important point, too. When all of this was going on, the bar staff, when they decided to close, instead of letting the people separate, they had doors on the backside. They had one small door through a chute to the hallway. They formed a line when all of these people were arguing and forced them out that chute. And so they forced the people that were drunk, arguing, shoving each other through a small area, and that's what started the fight.
The Cotton Bowl Tunnel.
Sir?
Sounds like the Cotton Bowl Tunnel. Are you saying then that had there not been this carrying on for an hour and a half, they've been sitting there quietly drinking for the entire time, and all of a sudden somebody jumps up, grabs another guy by the neck, and rams his head into the wall, there'd be no liability?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying this was entirely foreseeable. Not only well,
that certainly wouldn't have been foreseeable. That wouldn't have been foreseeable then, would it?
If you had nothing going on for an hour and a half,
right.
If you had no prior crimes, if you didn't have 12 prior documented assaults, or serious.
I'm just talking about what happened in the bar that time, that night.
Well, if nothing had happened, period, and no prior criminal activity, I agree with Justice Heck in the analysis of Timberwolf. However, here we have egregious conduct for an hour and a half before this happened. Brad Smith was an innocent bystander. He did not participate.
Are there any further questions?
One final question, Chief. Just so that I'm clear, your brief uses the word train or training. Are you complaining about the training of the security personnel at Del Lago?
But
I may be misreading it.
The problem here, to answer that, they alleged they had directed security. They reserved the right how to direct the security. That was clear from the testimony of the two guards, Chancellor and Moriarty. Yet they were on the golf cart where there was nothing going on, no alcohol being sold.
So you believe they should have been in the bar instead of in the golf cart? So you're complaining about training to some degree?
Yes, absolutely.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
While you're coming up, what do you think about this actual knowledge argument that there was an hour and a half of confrontation, escalation, provocation, that you've really kind of moved down to actual, concrete, here and now knowledge?
Well, we have a couple problems with that. One is, if it was so egregious in the bar for an hour and a half, why did Brad Smith stay there? Why didn't he leave the bar?
That would be a jury question, right, than whether there's a legal duty.
Well, that may be true. However, remember the jury did find Brad Smith 49% responsible.
And that would be the answer to that. These are factual questions. So, well, what's the answer to
it? With respect to the answer to the duty question, remember now, this is a third-party criminal act case, so we have to start at the beginning. What is the landowner's duty in a third-party criminal act case? To foresee that this criminal act might occur. How do we foresee that? Based upon the prior criminal history of the premises. If we don't have the history to foresee that this would occur, we wouldn't foresee it. And if we don't have the history, how then do these ongoing acts help us to foresee it? If Del Lago had never
if
had...
If there were a fight to break out here right now, I would call that officer and say, can you please stop this fight, right? And so if in the bar there's shoving and yelling going on, why would there not be some duty to call security to calm the situation?
Your Honor, that would take this case into a different place. This is not the case for this court to extend
that
the Timberwolf duty.
That doesn't seem to me to be a nonsensical rule. If you are in a public setting, you are profiting from the patrons being there, and you see a fight break out, there would be a duty to call security or call the police to protect the public. That seems like a pretty sensible rule.
And I agree with you. And as soon as the fight did break out, security was called immediately. Immediately when a fight broke out. No fight had broken out earlier in the evening. There was no criminal conduct earlier in the evening. There was no assault. No one was hit.
The jury thought otherwise. It seemed to them, apparently, from their verdict, that things were getting out of hand and that Del Lago did not respond appropriately.
Well, and we would submit to the court that the duty starts the duty that should be imposed in this case starts with the Timberwalk analysis and whether or not this
is foreseeable. That's where I keep getting confused between the breach and the duty.
Mm-hmm.
Under your construct, then, you would say that on this record, the standard of care and what we would have to decide would be that with all these incidents, similar, weighing similarity, weighing foreseeability, weighing all the Timberwalk factors, there was no duty to provide security in the Del Lago bar as a matter of law.
That is Del Lago's position, yes. We did not have the criminal history on that premises that this activity would ever be foreseeable to Del Lago such that a security officer should have been stationed
in
that bar.
And the fact that they did is irrelevant to that determination. And whether they were called soon enough or not is irrelevant. To rule your way, we would have to say on this record as a matter of law, there was no duty to provide security in the bar in the first instance.
Yes, that would be the beginning of the analysis. That is true. Everything that the opposing counsel is talking about goes to proximate cause, goes to breach. The question was whether or not Del Lago had a duty to have security on the premises to protect its invitees generally from this sort of crime. And if they did they meet that duty with such a significant security force in place, which the plaintiff's expert himself admitted was significant and appropriate for this resort, considering the risks that could occur.
That's a different question, though. Now you're asking whether the security that was provided was appropriate or not. But my understanding is your position is they did not have to provide security in the bar at all on this record.
On this record, that is true. That is true. Because, again, we should be performing the Timberwalk analysis based on prior incidents that occurred at the resort. They must be confirmed. They must be similar. We don't have any of that.
But if they take it upon themselves to have security, they go the extra mile, they have security, you can't deploy that security in a negligent fashion.
Well, then that goes to the breach, and that would go towards the cause. And then, of course, proximate cause is a critical issue in this case, too. Would the presence of security have prevented this from happening? Recall now, Brad Smith injected himself into the bar fight that he says Del Lago should have protected him from. That's a critical point in this case, as is the fact that Brad Smith never identified his assailant when he could have. He knew some of the members of this.
And that seems to go back to the chief's comment that the jury took care of that in the allocation of responsibility.
Well, again, of course, duty is the legal question, and we've got to start there, and we've got to properly impose the duty analysis, and Timberwalk would be the analysis to be applied. This would not be the case to then extend the Timberwalk analysis.
So you say you call security the moment the fight erupted or broke out, but just when does a fight really become a fight? Is it only when punches begin to fly, or is it at some point just before that with all the shoving and pushing around, or...
Well, again, I mean, this record shows that if there was a shoving incident that occurred an hour and a half before this fight occurred, and as the night's going on, people are leaving the bar, there's very protracted, quick, and minor incidents that occurred throughout the evening. And so we are saying that it was, and every witness in this case testified, they didn't expect this to happen. It was entirely spontaneous. None of them felt threatened. They never expected this to occur. It was a complete surprise.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank
the
you.
Cause is submitted, and the court once again wants to thank Baylor University, the staff, administration, the law school students, our colleagues on the bench for welcoming us so graciously to Waco and to this university. And I hope you've seen in these excellent arguments by both sides in both cases how powerful the law can be. And how important our jobs are to decide the case. The marshal will adjourn the court.
Clerk will adjourn the court.
All right. Oh, yay. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.